Ahoy, fellow functioning androids.
And welcome aboard the Joy of Trek, an illogical podcast exploring the science labs and eponymous planets of Star Trek, all of it. I'm Cocky.
I'm Kay.
And being scolded by Stella is your chief engineer, Greg.
Together, we're on a mission through the Android Control Center of Star Trek to find the bluster in every swindler and the good in every episode.
Even the patent violations.
Because every episode must be someone's favorite, and that might as well be us.
So arm your explosives and join us as we waltz into
the Joy of Trek. Oh, very good. Greg's been writing excellent scripts for us.
Yes, very much so. So we are doing original series, episode 208, I, Mud.
Or season 2, episode 12, depending on like the production order and the airing order and the preferred order are all a little bit wibbly-wobbly.
Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately. But I, Mud is apparently an absolute classic, and this was recommended to us by a friend of our chief.
Oh.
Yeah, so Pico recommended I, Mud, saying, I'm a recent Star Trek fan, and I'm going through every series of Star Trek in order they were released, currently on DS9.
Damn.
Wow.
That's not very recent, then. I mean, if he's already made his way through 7 seasons of Next Generation.
I mean, you know, binging is a thing.
I know, but that's really still quite a few hundred hours of television that we're talking about.
Yeah. No, yeah, it really is. Like, in the order of 200, coming up on 300 hours.
So, we'll see. Let's interpret recent as a not long term. But
oh, I wonder if Pico's also, like, doing the thing where, you know, some episodes of Next Generation and DS9 came out in the same week.
Oh, very good point.
Doing that full experience that some of us managed during the initial run.
That would be amazing, yeah.
Okay. TOS's intentionally zany moments are often a blast, and this one's chock full of them. Watching the crew dance, act absurd to confuse the androids is one of my favorite moments in the entire series. Oh, this is so cool. Mm. This is someone who's like recently binged the whole original series and giving us that perspective. Oh, that's so cool.
Chief Engineer Greg here. I have to chime in because there is a connection that I had to this episode that I wasn't sure about at first, and I had to talk with my brother and just make sure I wasn't just inventing a memory whole cloth or having some kind of holodeck malfunction, because I was so sure when I saw the image of Stella pointing at Mud in a little like cage thing, whatever, I was like, oh, I recognize that. Why do I recognize that? So back in like the days where you ordered a subscription to get a VHS with 2 episodes on it from the Columbia House Video Club, my brother Zach had a VHS tape from that subscription that was I, Mud, as well as The Trouble with Tribbles. And because the Tribbles episode was the one that I knew of and I remembered, I watched that, but I had to fast forward through or sometimes watch through. I think I probably did watch I, Mud a couple times, but it wasn't as like, oh, haha, there's funny things and Kirk's being like pelted with the Tribbles with. So it was just a weird moment to watch this and be like, oh, this is a childhood memory just completely unlocked here. So that's my little personal connection here that I'd forgotten about.
Do you want to read the synopsis?
Oh, it's quite a long one.
It's quite a long one.
Yes, TOS 211, I, Mud. Captain Kirk and the crew have a second run-in with con man Harry Mud, this time finding him as the king of a planet of androids. The Enterprise is captured and an android, which takes the entire crew to uncharted planet in the galaxy. Kirk, Spock, Bones, Uhura, Scotty, and Chekov land with the android on the planet to find Harry Mud as the king of the planet and about 200,000 androids to serve him. He reveals that the androids were lent to him to learn about and serve humans and demand more specimens to serve man.
Harry Mud plans to leave the entire crew of the Enterprise behind and take the starship. By unraveling the weak points of the androids, the crew of the Enterprise damage the main control unit, Norman, reprogram the androids to serve their original purpose of settling the planet, how exactly is unclear, gain control of the Enterprise, and leave Harry Mud behind to live with the humorous androids.
Well, humorous is giving a bit of a, giving them a bit of credit. That's
first aired on November 3rd, 1967, written by Stephen Candell, directed by Mark Daniels, and guest starring Roger C. Carmel, best known for Harry Mud, and Cyclonus in the 1980s Transformer cartoon and movies.
Oh.
There's also Roger C. Carmel.
In the background, you can hear also appearing in this episode, Pip the Podcat, who seems to have been having a little squeak out with the birds outside.
Yeah, she's having a regular old aria. She's not really a very quiet pod kitty.
No, if a bit
rambunctious. Yes. I noticed that you've been giving her more than the allotted chances that you said you were going to give her to calm
she's
down.
She's been pretty good. I mean, the whole just hanging off my knee for a moment there was not really a too disturbing thing. She's currently hunting spiders at the top of her cat pole.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, do we like spiders? We're not in Australia. We can like spiders.
Oh, yes. But what does our opinion on spiders have to do with whether or not the cat hunts them?
Well, maybe we should discourage her from it, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and my enemy is mosquitoes.
Fair.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, it's not like I can stop her.
Okay, this was a really fun episode. Do you have any warp cores to dump?
Well, let's see.
Yeah.
I say we eject the warp core!
Because I heard you writing down a factual inaccuracy.
I mean, it's not really a factual inaccuracy, but, the race that built the androids, their planet went Nova.
Yeah, their son went Nova.
How did that kill them?
Caught them completely by surprise, and all of them lived on that one planet.
Suns don't accidentally go Nova,
Died over the course of time.
Yeah, anybody with the basis knowledge of stars, which you would assume of a space-traveling species that builds fantastic androids, would be able to see that their sun is approaching Nova state. It usually only takes a few billion years or so. So it's not like it sneaks up on you.
Well, neither does a climate cataclysm, and yet...
Yes, but we don't have starships to evade the climate cataclysm. I mean, some people are working on it, but...
We have plenty of means. We have had, over decades, plenty of means.
Yeah.
And a lot of forces have been... I mean, not to get, super dark, but it's Don't Look Up, the excellent satirical film about exactly this, the ability for a civilization to self-deceive.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what happened. Maybe they were under the rule of King Alex Jones. Ugh.
Yes, ugh. All right, well, I don't think there's any other ones other than, a proper
Android.
The sexual
politics of the 1960s are being excellent.
Well, no, of course not. Mud is, blatantly sexist, but they're not even playing it for laughs. They're just playing him as a blatant sexist. So, I can see that would be... Maybe I'm looking at it too charitable, but the fact that he is, I suppose male androids also have their purpose.
Mm. I mean... Yeah, they sure do, don't they?
Well,
a lot of fanfics expanded on the...
It depends on how your tastes run, but yes, Mud is obviously played off as a sexist pig. So that doesn't make the episode sexist, I'd say.
Oh, I mean just the society in which it's set, because Chekhov has the same inclinations, and Uhura is written that her
a bit
obsession
shallow.
Is with youth and beauty.
Eternal youth, yes.
And being grabbed quite firmly by Kirk and betraying everyone, but yeah, okay.
And the only other thing is that I have is that an advanced android can't handle a simple logic paradox.
I know.
It's just yes. I mean, that's fundamental... Mutational. I mean, there's no answer. So yeah, your AI should be able to work around that. Accept that there's a paradox.
Yeah, but you know what? I saw something that unfortunately I don't have with me to share.
Mm-hmm.
It was a TV Guide article about exactly this.
Yeah.
About exactly this episode and how was this population of 200,000 androids done? Well, it was done with some set of twins.
Yeah. A bit of split screen work.
Some clever trick photography, as was mentioned. But that little article was only a single page and had some cool behind the scenes photos. On seven different occasions, did it try to explain what androids were?
Oh.
Synthetic people, artificial people, the fabrics, the replicas, just to sort of settle into people's minds. Robots were not a settled concept,
nor, in fact,
were computers.
Yes.
So, this idea that there's a computer in charge of things would be new to a lot of viewers.
That makes sense, yeah. Did your little article also include the casting attempt at a pair of twins that they found on Hollywood Boulevard?
And their cat.
And their cat, yes. Two ladies who were apparently walking, a set of twins who were apparently working as prostitutes there and had a cat, and they were brought in for a casting call, and the cat completely scratched up the casting director's skirt, and they were not hired.
They were not invited back. Oh, dear. So close and yet so far. So I think that's it for the... I also have How did they escape the planet? Because they managed to shut down all of these androids,
yeah.
But that doesn't enable them to operate the transporter controls on the Enterprise overhead, because the entire crew is down here.
Yeah, but the planet itself has also has transporters. I mean, Mud said, like, I had some people beamed up towards the Enterprise, you know? Like, it makes sense that they have advanced technological systems there, which is going to lead to me another little bit of comment that I have later on.
Oh, well, then we've sort of interrupted yeah. all of each other's... warp cores.
Well, okay, actually, there's one more. Well, it's not really a warp core, okay. but it really touches on this point. It's like they make
I
a whole.
We were reaching the net make, zero
well,
warp
well, they
cores.
Make a whole song and dance about requiring the medical supplies on the Enterprise, whereas Bones has literally 5 minutes before been waxing lyrical about the advanced state of the facilities that they have here. Why don't the androids just like, oh, what's wrong with him? What does he need? Yeah, we have that.
Yeah, it's part of their ploy, though,
right.
and they do show some disinterest. You know, he is human; he is for yeah. you to care for.
Yes,
which is also a bit.
But
of a
also,
weird
it's
turn.
Like, oh, well, yeah, we need the supplies from the Enterprise. Okay, what do you need? We'll get them for you. But yeah, all right.
All right, are you ready to dive in? Because I fucking love this episode.
Bring it on. Hit it.
I kind of miss your hit it on. Now you don't do it anymore.
Oh. Like, hit it
it
on.
Came out so naturally that one time.
All right. We open with Bones and Spock doing a little walk and talk in the corridor.
Yeah, they pass a hunky gentleman who nods at them, and then they turn to appreciate his bum, and they yeah. sort of gossip about him like two schoolgirls appreciating a hot boy's bum.
Well, Bones mistrusts him
yes.
for a variety of reasons, which also gives him a massive case of foot-in-mouth disease.
Well, I know when something doesn't strike me right, and he doesn't. Specifics, Doctor. Labels do not make arguments.
Very good, Spock. And then... McCoy goes on to list all the qualities that this Mr. Norman has, who apparently has been on board for 72 hours, which he apparently shares with Spock.
Yes. Spock, of course, gets the final dig in.
Besides, he has avoided two appointments that I've made for his physical exam without reason.
That's not at all surprising, Doctor. He's probably terrified of your beads and rattles.
Effectively calling Bones a witch doctor.
Yeah, saying that he's avoided all of McCoy's like attempts at a
right.
physical...
I mean, I do believe that Spock doesn't have a very high opinion of human state of medicine.
Huh.
I do recall that being a bit of a contentious thing in that as a running gag, I guess, because why would he make such a comment to Bones otherwise? Like,
yeah, they're very tsundere toward each other, right? They're
right.
very hot and cold, and they like to provoke and tease one another.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of teaser, we're in the longest teaser in Star Trek
so
far, at well over 5 minutes. And this hunky Norman walks into this room full of switches,
yes.
knocks the guy out.
Yep.
Like, was that a hand wave or was that like a judo chop? It went a bit quick
yes.
for me to spot.
He does a lot of throwing around of the crew in the next few minutes. He flicks a few buttons, he twists a few lamps, because I notice he's doing the whole making hand motions over a panel and doing things.
Yes. There is excellent physicality. And they start to notice problems on the bridge.
Yes.
In one continuous shot, starts with Kirk leaning over Sulu's console after he's alerted.
There's an unplanned course change being fed into the instrument, sir. Corrected. I can't, sir.
They're trying to correct this. They sent the security division to secondary control or secondary helm or whatever it is that they call it.
Auxiliary control,
Auxiliary control, that's the one, yes. I guess it's the battle bridge.
Yeah, it's this cute little set with magenta lighting here and there. And yeah, Norman seems to know exactly what he's doing.
Yes.
Security arrives in that location.
Finds
just
the unconscious engineer there.
Yeah. This guy, what was his name? Lieutenant Rowe.
Okay.
I don't generally shit on people on this show, but he's a terrible actor. Like, he sounded like a robot. I thought for a second, oh, so there's a second android and,
right,
it's Lieutenant Rowe. And he's just less convincing.
I didn't quite catch on to that fact that Norman was a robot because I had like, oh, he talks just like Kirk. And no, actually, I've got written down he talks mechanically. But yes, then it turns out that he is a robot or an android, as we should call him, I suppose.
Yes, but if we do that, then we have to call all the female ones gynoids or gynoids or gunoids.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know, android as in like right. man-like.
Yeah, yeah.
So robots...
Well, I mean, that's like, you know, man, like, there's a whole thing of, like, mankind. Why shouldn't it be womankind? No, those two words have an entirely different... Woman isn't man with woe in front of it. It has an entirely different etymological background.
Yes, but there is something to be said for why is the default for humanity...
Right.
The masculine is the default, and that's, like, yeah, that is a cultural choice
very
that
true.
We can make...
Yeah, very true.
So these problems persist...
And in fact, they spread.
Auxiliary control, this is the captain. Auxiliary control, what's going on down there?
Sir, auxiliary control is on total override.
He goes knocking around people on engineering.
It's cool.
Scotty gets hung out over his console.
Yeah, and he manages to squeak out with his last few calories of consciousness. Captain, oh, he's here, Captain.
Oh, no, we hadn't guessed that. Like, we have an intruder on board, and suddenly engineering stops responding. Wonder where the intruder is going to be.
I know. Kirk has been yelling futilely. Yes. Scotty, are you there? He's coming your way. Scotty. Yeah. Like, put in a clip of just how many times he yells Scotty here.
Scotty, what's going on down there? This is the captain. Scotty, report.
Scotty, the intruder is in your area.
What's going on down there, Scotty?
He's here.
Scotty.
And then finally Scott says, he's here, Captain. And then he goes, oh, security to engineering.
Yes. He tells Spock to take over the bridge, and just as he's about to head out to engineering himself, Norman appears and stops him.
Yes.
He grabs him by the arm, which makes Kirk look rather, like, disapproving. He's just like, how dare you touch me, unhand me, you ruffian.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that, but that's what his body language and look conveys to me.
I think we're supposed to infer that it was a very painful grip, and that he's very, very tough and, like, concealing all the pain, and then he rubs his little arm to get the wrinkles out of his beautiful green tunic.
Yes.
With a lot of blinking, I noticed, Norman explains what he's done, because he's completely still otherwise.
Okay. I also noticed that, like, I don't remember exactly what the rules behind this, but Kirk is wearing his sexy green tunic with a low-slung comm badge.
Uh-huh.
Like, is this, like, an official, like, I mean, green is not a standard color, so is this, like, a custom uniform that he has made?
He's worn it more often. I know, I thought this was, like, the captain's uniform. Maybe that was different for a while.
I guess.
Then he settled on gold.
I guess I know what happened. It's like it used to be a golden uniform, but someone in service crew messed it up and washed them together with the blue uniforms, and then it took on a greenish tint, so that's why it's...
Oh, yes. No, I remember that fan fiction. After Spock slept over and their uniforms were in the hamper together.
But we require your ship.
You require... Who and what are we?
Not having watched this before, I initially thought that Norman was going to be Mutt. Because I didn't know that there had been an interaction with Mutt before. And especially because of the way that he actively manages to take over the ship, which really mirrors what we saw in Strange New Worlds. You know,
Discovery.
Sorry, it was Discovery. Not
Discovery
Strange
Season 1, which we recapped before.
About a month or two ago, I suppose.
Magic to make the sanest man go mad.
So I noticed a lot of similarities between the way Norman conducts himself and the way Mud...
Yeah.
So
he knows exactly how to take over a Federation starship.
Right.
I wonder where he learned how to do that.
Yeah.
Yes. Right? That must have been during Discovery that he had all of those loops to figure out.
Of course, because Discovery is before...
Yes! That was young Mutt.
Yes. Oh, great.
So he figured out, okay, so first you go to auxiliary control, and then you go later on and you type in this, and like he had the zero-day exploit.
No, I think it's cool, because canonically, Mutt, that happened before this.
Yes!
Very
and
good.
So he was able to teach it to Norman, who says that...
And if you attempt to use your phasers, the trigger relay will be activated.
You know, this is a speed with Keanu Reeves.
There is a trigger on board. If you kill me or if you try to disable it, it'll just blow up your ship.
So settle down, because for 4 days we're going to be traveling in warp 567 to this unnamed planet of us. And who is us? Who is we? Or who are you?
I thought it was kind of funny. Like, we require a ship. He also says, like, we mean you no harm, which is kind of like the classic aliens, like, arriving on Earth, we mean you no harm.
Not afraid.
But that's more a biblical thing.
I mean, is there much difference, honestly, between technologically superior aliens and angels and supernatural beings? And
do you often douse men appearing in your bedroom with fire retardant chemicals? If so, I'm not surprised you're still single.
Sick Alan Rickman reference
yes.
for Dogma by Kevin Smith.
Yes, but Norman reveals himself to be an android by open the flimsiest little hatch that I've ever seen.
A little flap on his belly.
It's like a tiny little cheap-ass punched from metal hinge that he's got there, which is like...
And an invisible hinge, too.
No, the hinge is very visible once he opens it. Yeah, it's tiny, it's flimsy. It's literally the kind of hinge that you would find on a lunchbox, you know? Like
there it is, right, yeah.
It's just a little thing.
Curled tin, yeah.
Exactly. It's like the flimsiest like thing I've ever seen with highly advanced electronics and, you know, I don't know what, titanium body or whatever it is that it's made out of underneath. Adaptable plastics, I think they call it later, or regenerative plastics.
Yes, advanced plastic. Ooh. Yeah. And we're watching this time the remastered version, so this thing has lights in. And I think it was deliberately like remade to look a bit more like Data. Because originally it looked
Data
more like
cables and stuff, yeah.
C-3PO in The Phantom Menace. Cables and wiring and lights. But with his grim task done, Norman declares that, well, this is how it's going to be. And he just sort of shuts down.
Yeah, that happens after the credits, yes.
Yeah. Well,
and he just stands there. Yep, I guess we're in for a trip for a few days.
We're going on a little trip, and Kirk has real grumpy face here.
He does a bit. He looks rather put out, I would say.
It's
that. Guess we're taking an unplanned detour. I wonder if they can still radio the Federation. Ship's been taken over, but they can go we're going to be gone for a bit.
Or eject the shuttle.
Dump the warp core.
Something, anyway, none of that seems to happen, and for 4 days nothing happens. Because apparently, like, originally, the arrival at the planet was going to happen in the second act.
Right.
And one of the writers, David Gerrold, a staff writer on Star Trek, a very, very good one.
Yeah.
Can you get them to the planet quicker? Can you figure out how to do that?
We want to spend more time on the planet, yes.
Exactly. So he skipped that bit, and he added a few jokes in there. And
the Enterprise has been underway at Warp 7 for 4 days. Now, we are entering orbit around a planet which has never been charted.
Norman awakes again and announces that several people must beam down to the planet at once. Conveniently, the entire main cast.
Yeah, five of them, I think.
With the exception of Scotty.
Sulu.
Sulu doesn't get to come.
Because Dr. K had another job.
Oh, okay.
So Sulu,
Sir not appearing in this movie.
Yeah, and then he was gone for a few episodes. He was filming something else. He wasn't needed for this. And they all beam down into my favorite set that I've ever seen on Star Trek, the original series. It's so gonzo. It's like purple lit rocks and orange and everything's diagonal. It looks so, it's so go-go.
It reminds me a lot of that set, which I think it was also the original series with the scary clown dude. Was that another?
The Thor, that was Voyager.
Voyager, that was, that was it, yeah. It reminded me a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were more rectangles there. Here,
right,
everything was more...
There's some bare rock here. All the doors are irregular trapezoids.
Yeah, amazing. All these unnecessary shapes. And immediately after being beamed down, these doors open.
To a K-class planet adaptable for humans by use of pressure domes and life support systems.
And we're introduced to the first of several camera moves that are just absolutely brilliant in selling how many androids there are.
Oh, yeah.
Right, because it starts with two, I believe these are Alice models.
I think so, yes.
And then the camera sort of pans to the left and... So there's the suggestion that there are two Alice models with our heroes and two Alice models with with Mud. And sometimes, you see our hero and Mud, and then you see one on each side and,
it's very well done.
So clever.
Although the claim of the writers was said, giving the impression that there are thousands on the planet. It's like, no, I mean, it's actually stated that there's only 500 of this particular model, but it's done very well.
And Kirk recognizes Mud, because this is not his first appearance. Apparently that was in Mud's Women, which we also haven't seen
yet. Okay, yes. He's a very jocular fellow. I see now again how they cast a actor with similar features to play Mud in Discovery.
Seeing Roger Carmel's version, original, makes me appreciate Rainn Wilson even more.
Yes, totally.
Laddiebuck and being so casual.
The constantly having nicknames for everybody.
Yes!
Well, to be absolutely accurate, Laddiebuck, you should refer to me as Mud the First, ruler of this entire sovereign planet.
And correcting people on their interpretation of his life story. And then he always insists on it being just a little bit more nuanced than they like to explain. And this leads into a wonderful exchange where Harcourt Fenton Mud explains his predicament and how he came to be here. And then Kirk translates it from bullshit into reality.
I made my way off the planet, stole a ship.
Which is payback for him.
Swindler and con man.
Entrepreneur.
Liar and rogue.
Did I leave you with that impression?
Yes.
It sets up the peril, namely that our heroes have been brought here for the rest of your lives.
Yes.
Harry Mudd is the lord of this planet, and they obey his every whim. He found this planet full of helpful androids, yes, and he's been ruling them.
And now he's... Although, well, I mean, they don't obey his every whim, because
turns
they...
out
they won't let me go. They want to study me. They want to learn more about human beings.
They picked a fine representative.
Watch your tongue, lad.
I love this sort of structure that, like, it starts off, even though he's in trouble,
mm-hmm,
he starts off, like, asserting power with this fiction, because he loves to live in these little fictions that, uh-huh, he constructs, that he's the ruler and they're in trouble, whereas actually, ooh, he kind of brought them in hopes that the androids would then let him go, which is also not the case.
Yeah. I love that scene where, like, basically he asks about the planet where he was captured when he was selling fake patents to the Nebians. Denebians, isn't that like the little... Oh no, Deb and Ebb. Sorry, I had a little Star Wars moment there. I was confusing Celestines, but it was because... What's-his-face says he did something on Deneb 4. But that's when Lando is talking to Han Solo about having been made general. Someone must have told him about my maneuver on Deneb 4.
That's... Oh, very, very good.
Okay, well done. I wasn't even sure about that. I had to go back and look that up because I was even thinking... Is he right there? Is he wrong there? And you were... It's the Battle of the Nab, not the Nab 4, but that's... I'm not gonna split hairs there, because you beat me on Star Wars knowledge, Kay. How does this... Is this what it's like to be a normal person talking to me?
That Celestin you're thinking about? Oh, I think it was recently mentioned by the chief.
Yes,
Nainun.
Yes.
Who's speaking Kikuyu.
Yes, it was in language. One of the episodes that recently... aired before we were recording this, so about 2 months ago.
Well, who knows how time works? Like, only very occasionally does our beloved chief engineer make it through the time vortex that seems to separate us, but only on the Patreon streams, by the way. So occasionally get a hangout and rewatch something together. Maybe this one will be the next one that we watch together.
This was a fun one, so yes, it'll definitely be a good candidate.
Well, it's up to the subscribers. They get to vote on which one we recap.
Do you know what the penalty of a fraud is on Deneb 5?
The guilty party has his choice. Death by electrocution, death by gas, death by phaser, death by hanging.
The key word in your entire peroration, Mr. Spark, was... death.
So, we're out of cake, you say?
Yes. Well, so my options are, or death.
Paraphrasing of a brilliant bit by Eddie Izzard.
Yes.
Hey, speaking of brilliant bits, now we're introduced to the multitude of androids, because while being flanked by two Alices,
we get a wide shot. Yes.
Yeah, two Alices arrive from the side, and two more Alices arrive from the other side.
Yes, fantastically done.
I mean, I
was literally sitting there watching, like, okay, are these just, like, different actresses who've been, like, kind of made up?
Right.
I was like, yeah, definitely... I was fooled, I will say. It was very well done for the, especially with the technology available at the time.
Yes, and I think there was a lot of attention paid to the set design as well, mm-hmm, because it's just a three-way split screen, right?
Yeah.
It's a very simple trick, but you've got to make sure that they don't cast shadows into each other's segments.
Oh, yes.
Right?
And I guess as long as you have a fixed camera, it's easy enough to splice that together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does take some, you know, precision in optical printing and editing, so that was excellent, excellently done.
But it turns out that Harry Mudd has basically gotten bored.
I ran out of ideas. I simply ran out of things for them to do.
When they insisted I bring them more human being.
He does, hey, very quickly, about the patent thing.
Yeah.
There may be a little bit of a warp core in that patents exist in the Federation.
Right, and Mudd rightfully cries, information wants to be free.
Yes!
Like the cry of the 90s, I believe, as the internet was being built.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation would find an ally in Harry Mudd, as would, unfortunately, modern generative AI companies who believe that human effort does not need to be rewarded.
Yes, basically they want free access to all intellectual property so we can sell it back to other people chopped up into little bits.
Yeah, Kirk's having none of it, and he does smirk. He does the Kirk smirk. I have it written down. He does a lot of Kirk
smirking. Kirk smirk.
McCoy points out that there's a little dark nook.
Oh, yeah. What's this?
Let me show you.
This is my entertainment.
Ugh.
That, gentlemen, is a shrine to the memory of my beloved Stella.
Beloved Stella, whom he's had recreated so that she can yell at him.
Harcourt! Harcourt, Fenton, Mudd, what have you been up to?
nothing good, I'm sure. Well, let me tell you, you lazy good for nothing.
And then he can say,
shut up.
And watch her just go.
And then she goes like, shuts her down like a marionette and the door closes again. But he really enjoys that.
Yeah, what a fun thing that I'm sure a lot
well,
of.
Well, it's like, well, I think of her.
Husbands.
I think of her constantly, and every time I do, I go further out into space. It's like, okay. So we can clearly see how that Mud is a troubled persona.
He's a shithead,
and written for comic relief. So no, absolutely. But
do you know he was almost going to have his own spin-off?
Oh. Wow.
Because he has a lot of fun.
Oh, yes, I
and guess. And he gets into fantastic adventures.
Yeah, a roguish scoundrel.
Yeah.
Which I still actually would love to see. Back on the Star Wars again.
Oh.
A spin-off with, I can't remember who was the name of the original actor who played Lando Calrissian.
Billy Dee Williams,
thank you. Basically, every episode starts with him sitting at a sabacc table somewhere, trying to run an actual story, and then cut as he's telling the story about something that happened. Cut to Daniel Glover, who then goes like, "Well, actually," and then we get the episode,
the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles,
essentially,
the Young Lando Calrissian Chronicles.
Yes.
Chief, what do you think?
Yes, that sounds amazing. I would love to see that happen. So maybe someday we'll see it. But in the meantime, we can at least just appreciate Billy Dee Williams' beautiful, beautiful, beautiful voice.
Smuggler, such a small word. I'm more of a galactic entrepreneur. That means business person.
I know what it means.
This is dope. I mean, I used to do this every week because in Rebel Air, we had a regular segment where the chief got to gush about which of the costumes he most wanted to cosplay.
Oh.
And I would come up with some tie-in product or novel or story or whatever.
Or spin-off.
This is amazing.
Very
yes,
good.
The Young Lando Calrissian.
Absolutely.
Chronicles, let's do it.
Who would play the young Han Solo, though? I mean,
Erich did a good job in Solo.
Yes, I suppose, yeah. He did. I mean, Solo is... It's not exactly... we're doing a Star Trek podcast, not Star Wars.
Yeah, Solo is a very good film.
Woody Harrelson, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Anyway.
So our heroes are brought into their gilded cage.
And they actually quite like it.
Yeah. They have a little chat.
This is where we have the old blah, blah, blah about how Mr. Mudd gave them purpose after the original. They're very servile androids. No, that's, it has the same problem.
Let's go with robots,
yes.
Because despite their makers being from a different galaxy, the galaxy of Andromeda, they were quite humanoid, as you say.
Right.
Okay, well, convenient.
Okay, great.
Whatever.
And it saves on makeup.
Oh, yeah, also. And perhaps explains their obsession with humans in particular.
Yes.
Why wouldn't they be more interested
I think that's just because they ran into Mud first and...
Ooh, here's an interesting one, because he had multiple of them created, but he had no interest in the male ones, so...
Oh, fair point.
Did he design the male ones, or is this what the makers already looked like?
Mm,
and
maybe.
Norman being unique.
Right, yes.
Look, they're in a lot of trouble, as Mr. Chekhov says, redundantly.
Yes.
And then
Bones
Kirk asks...
agrees with him.
Yeah,
Spock, and if you say we're in a lot of trouble...
We are.
It's
like very...
And we must direct our attack to the heart of the matter. Ooh, immediately on the attack.
Yes.
And then he says something that, as a droid rights activist, I don't really approve of, says Spock.
Yeah.
Obviously, this many androids cannot operate independently.
Spock is definitely wearing the boots of conclusion jumping in this episode.
Yes, I think so too. And they're not capable of creative thought. We're about a century away from Data, and that's with human technology, let alone Andromedan technology.
Oh, surely less than this. Oh, no, about 70 years, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
They're being brought to... Oh, how do you describe this? It's like...
It's just a lounge.
Well, I mean, they're all being tempted in their own way now.
Right.
They're being brought to different locations, or we're at least suggested that they are.
It starts with a scene where Norman is standing behind a console where Spock gets to confirm his conclusion jumping by...
This would seem to be a simple relay center. Are all of you controlled through this device?
And it's got this glowing
crystal thing.
Like XXL butt plug.
Oof.
Glowing and being worshipfully held.
We cannot tell if it's a butt plug because we don't know if it's got a flared base and we can't see
fair
that.
Fair enough,
so,
yeah.
Like, let's not call things a butt plug unless we know they're safe to be used as such.
Well said. If there's anything you take away from the joy of Trek, if there's no base, it isn't safe.
Mm. puts a whole new purpose of getting to third base, but
yikes! Okay, moving safely along. So this is Spock's temptation being brought into the computer facilities, and Uhura's temptation is to be brought into the sort of android manufacturing location.
Right, a little bit of sexism again here. It's like, oh, the women want to be young and beautiful their entire lives. I mean, sure, men also want to be young and beautiful their entire lives, but it's generally less emphasized in art and literature.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, certainly professional women like Uhura want other things than youth and beauty forever.
Michelle Nichols. I mean, she didn't stay young, but she did stay beautiful.
Oh, my God. A breathtaking woman. And her beauty, marvelous as it is one of the lesser amazing qualities that a woman has. Like her Broadway performances as an actress, and most importantly, as a recruiter for NASA. That's the major thrust of her life. Like, she went through full preparatory training to experience it physically. And, like, she was instrumental in helping NASA achieve its goals for diversity hiring.
Fantastic. I did not know that.
Oh, she spent years doing it. She was, like, a spokesperson for, you know, the reason that there are black astronauts.
Right. Hang on. What's the time frame for the original series play out again?
1966 through 1969, so just up until they.
Right, so there was
like. Off the air before the first footstep on the moon.
Right, yeah, that sounds about right. No, I was thinking about the alternate Gemini program crew with the women who were selected as an alternate training thing.
In the series. Wait, is that a real thing that really happened?
I do believe that's a real thing, which was just like expanded in For All Mankind.
Yes, the series by Ronald D. Moore.
Right, yes. Yeah.
Fascinating history to discover.
I do believe that most of those personas were actual people, just like the men were actual, but the women were just kind of like shunted off sideways in reality, whereas in For All Mankind, they were much more prominently.
Isn't it amazing how we're still finding out that the role of women and various other disenfranchised groups has just been sort of erased from the history that we learned?
There's also a fantastic movie about the women computers.
Invisible figures from the Mercury program.
Yes, which also deals with racism in the US in general and NASA in specific at the time. And
it's the first time that I've ever cheered on a scene where someone steals a library book.
Yes, I can imagine that. Yes.
Yeah, because this woman, like, she wanted to learn about these new computers and she wanted a book on COBOL programming, which they wouldn't rent out to a colored person. Yeah. So yes, knowledge needs to be free.
True, yeah.
So just a quick little correction. It's not Invisible Figures, it's Hidden Figures, based on the book by Margot Lee Shetterly about the lives of Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson, three mathematicians who worked as computers.
Jim, you should see the research facilities. They've got a lab down there that, well, I could spend the rest of my life studying.
I do so admire a man who devotes himself to knowledge.
Don't lose your head, Bones. Nobody's staying anywhere.
Stubborn, Kirk, stubborn.
Scotty arrives. Like, Captain goes like, you were ordered to stay aboard. And it's like, well, yes, I did, but they took us away. And Mudd reveals, like, oh, did I forget to tell you that I've been taking the entire crew of the Enterprise off the ship and I've replaced it by robots?
Yeah, and Scotty was the last one. Oh, you bogus rat!
Yes. What's a bogus rat? It's like a fake rat. I mean, okay.
Oh, Chekhov takes his turn on the throne and is attended by two of the, you know what? We maybe have, like, not being able to tell the various models of these androids apart, I've got to say.
I think the clothing also gives it away.
Yes, but, like, I don't know which ones are Alice's and which ones are Maureen's, so I'm just going to say...
Well, these
are
specifically Alice because it says so in the subtitles.
Oh!
At least we finally got to find out who the f*** Alice is.
Oh, sick pop culture reference, bro. I totally got that one.
And yes, he sits there lamenting a little bit, like, oh, it's a shame you're not
real girls.
Oh, but we are.
We are programmed to function as human females, Lord.
You are?
Yes, my Lord.
This place is even better than Leningrad.
I mean, I don't know what kind of city Leningrad is in at this point, but, you know.
I mean, it sounds like it's, like, Soviet Reno.
Yeah, near Starbase 69 on Earth. You know?
we see that you enjoy Jamaharon.
Scotty is waxing lyrical about the technical facilities.
Oh, microvision and a nanopulse laser.
Hunt worked the finest tolerances. It's like, no, I mean, do you generally get better, like, tolerances with machinery rather than handworking it? But, yeah, it's like, fair enough.
It's a beautiful prop. I think this is a prop that we see fairly... Actually, hey, Chief... Do you know anything about this prop?
So at first I thought that maybe you were talking about Tucker tubes, but no, those are not actually in there. Or they're now called Tucker tubes thanks to Lower Decks, but before there's like the blinking lights that has just been like in every science fiction property ever, basically. However, in this case, there's two objects that are here. There's one that's like a CD rack type thing. It looks like you just put CDs in there. That, as well as like the other part of it that's like kind of like on its side long ways, both of those are used in other episodes. So we have both of these together in the episode Obsession, as well as the Immunity Syndrome. Then we have a CD rack part is in Elan of Troyes. But then like the three cylinders with one kind of in it, that's also in The Devil in the Dark. So really just, hey, we made this prop. We're going to get our monies out of it and just dress it up and move it around a little bit. And we can ignore the fact that Scotty said there's never anything like it when it's clearly in sick bay.
It looks like a laser lathe. I mean, that's what I'm going to call it.
A rudimentary lathe made out of lasers.
It's definitely not rudimentary. It's a very advanced lathe. But that's kind of what it looks to me like. It kind of looks a bit like what a lathe would look like if you had no idea what a lathe actually does.
Well, as someone who doesn't really know what a lathe does, I can sort
it makes,
of...
It makes things round.
Is that what it does?
Essentially. I mean, that's like really oversimplifying it, but yes.
Isn't it like a sort of like a pottery wheel?
In a way, yes.
Right? Where you can scrape things out of a cylinder.
That would not be a bad way to describe a lathe, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, like, when you've got one of those curvy, like, chair legs right. or whatever, that's...
Yes,
you put it on a lathe and you spin it around exactly. and you scrape and shave until it's got the silhouette that you want. Hey.
There you go. Very
thank
good.
Thank you. And a lathe would be good tool
I know this is, like, not a correct... But it's like, you know, if you want to explain to someone what a lathe is, that'll do.
That'll do. Yes. That'll do, Cocky. Yeah. Okay, they're all sort of gathering together and... Ooh, Kirk's worry has come true. He's worried that his crew will be seduced by the
because
the
everybody is like you're hitting all my people at their weakest spot.
We only wish to make you happy and comfortable, Captain.
And it's a very pleasant place, Captain Uhura says.
It's a lovely gilded cage. They're all very charmed by it. They're all complete unprofessional idiots.
Yes, and Captain sets them right and straight. Like he literally sets Chekhov straight. He like pulls him up.
Yes, yes. He does a lot sort of criticizing Chekhov's posture. Throughout this episode as well. The floor is no place for an officer, Mr. Chekhov.
Do you require something, Lord?
No. Yes. My ship.
I am not programmed to
respond
in
that
area.
Yes, I know.
Which is their default, like, I don't want to talk about this. That would probably be a good thing to do in my own relationships. Like, I'm not programmed to respond in that area whenever. No?
Oh, wow.
I see a terrified look on your face. Don't think that's good relationship advice.
Well, I mean, it's 2024, so I'd probably go with, according to OpenAI policy, we're not able to comply. Zing!
Very good.
Oh, hey, if you're listening to this in the future and you don't know what that means... Oh, what a nice future you live in. Yeah.
Congratulations, we survived.
We shall serve you to your best interests to make you happy.
But we're unhappy here.
Please explain unhappy.
Which is kind of odd that they don't understand that if, like, wants and desires aren't reserved, which is what Kirk tells them.
Yes.
We want Enterprise.
The Enterprise is not a want or a desire. It is a mechanical device.
No, it's a beautiful lady and we love her.
And we see the first time that, like, they kind of go space out as their necklace glows and they are communicating with the hive mind, as it turns out. Because the little console that Norbert was fondling, what's his name?
Norman.
Norman. Norbert, yes. Turns out to be, like, the central communications hub. Which allows all the individual robots to basically mind meld and put all their computational power together to... basically decide on an issue.
Yes, yes. Because the first time that he tries to exploit that, we get some excellent dialogue about this.
Illogical, illogical. All units relate. All units. Norman, coordinate.
Right.
So they're a distributed intelligence. Like, all the units are participating in the processing.
Yeah.
I guess Norman functions like a hypervisor, you know, in a multi-threading computational
makes
environment.
Sense, yeah.
Yeah, Kirk is really... He really doesn't, like... trust his crew to resist the temptation of this
place.
No,
he
does
not. Which is actually very well played upon later with Uhura. But yes, they basically go to check out Mud, who is under the impression that he is about to leave.
And the androids reveal, no, Lord Mud.
Yes.
And Norman declares that they always knew that he was a flawed example of humankind from the moment they met him, and they've been deceiving him. They've used him to get more humans, but they absolutely won't let him leave.
We cannot allow any race as greedy and corruptible as yours to have free run of the galaxy.
basically make the rest of the universe really happy by subverting them and controlling them and serving them.
Yes. We're going to be topping from the bottom. We're going to be serving and controlling
them.
Very
good point, yes.
They'll become so totally dependent on us, but just the humans. So that gets everybody's head back on straight.
Yep.
And where previously they
and
were...
we shall serve them and you will be happy and controlled.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, some people would be.
Hey, some people are into that.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Now all the temptation is gone.
Yeah. We get to the whole point. There's a whole show, a song and dance routine, which is being made about how they confuse...
Don't say song and dance routine in an episode that actually contains a song and dance routine.
I mean, I thought it was rather appropriate.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Metaphorical. There is literally an metaphorical song and dance routine, which is already kind of preempted by this whole thing is here. Because, like, we want everybody to be happy. But you can't.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be conflicting thoughts and desires. Some people want this, some people want that, and those are permanently, irredeemably in opposition to each other, contradictory to each other.
That's why you have compromise.
Yes, exactly. So it's like that already should throw them into a logic loop that makes them die out as soon as they get into humans.
I mean, any species, honestly.
Right.
Like, imagine them actually dealing with Vulcans and then realizing the tremendous internal inconsistency of Vulcan values.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Highly emotional people and desperate not to show it to anybody.
Right. Which you can describe as hypocrisy, but it's also like, it's just a cultural value.
Yeah.
Deeply inconsistent, and therefore the culture is a product of compromise, as all cultures are.
All right, what have we got to work with?
Well, Captain, androids and robots, but they're just not capable of independent creative thought.
Yet the device that Norman claims to be their central control is totally inadequate to the task of directing more than 200,000 of them.
I do like that Spock comes in with a whole lot of information and then McCoy goes, how do you know? Well, I asked them.
Yeah, which is like, yeah, perfectly cool.
Yeah, Kirk goes, they don't expect us to be able to do anything with it. Why wouldn't they tell us?
Mudd is skeptical at first, but soon enough willing to play along to GTFO because he wants out.
Yes. He's doing something that we saw Rainn Wilson do as well. And it's so interesting to having seen his performance as Harry Mudd first and then seeing Roger Carmel's performance because, like, now he's turning over to expecting the crew to solve his problems for him. Now that they're in the same boat, now he's very critical of them.
Yeah.
And you should be doing better to get us out of here.
Yes. Such a self-centered man.
And they start sort of bullying him and sort of gathering around him. And once he offers to help, well, the only thing that we need from you is to die. Oh, no, just to fall asleep. And he's forcibly injected and becomes part of their ruse.
Because this is where we get Kirk going to talk to Alice and telling them, we need medical supplies here.
Is this not Alice? Is it Maureen?
I think it's an Alice. But...
I mean, they have these helpful necklaces with numbers on them to be able to tell them apart, but that doesn't tell you the model.
Exactly. Also, does it matter?
I don't know. I do like to, address people with a name that they address themselves with, right?
No, totally. But, I mean, it depends on how much their hive minds, or if it only works. Well, I guess it only happens when they do the blinky thing and then confer with everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
But the ruse continues as not just we have to have the medical supplies, but as soon as Alice comes into the room to check it out, Uhura...
They're lying. It's a trick. Dr. McCoy injected something into Harry Mudd to make him look sick. It's a trick to get back on board and sabotage the ship.
Says Alice, we will not be obeying your order. And then Kirk comes up to Uhura so threatening, grabs her by the shoulders, and then shakes her. Beautiful, Uhura, beautiful.
Yes. We never hear from the thing as well. She says, yes, I want to have my brain placed in an android body. And Alice goes, the programming for your body will be completed before we leave. You have been of assistance. We shall fulfill our obligation. And we never hear from that again.
Thank Christ, honestly, because...
That would have been a fun scene, though. Brain getting scooped out and being put in, as in Lex, when his merciful shadow is taken out of the body and the brain gets put out as he called? The something ancestor?
The Divine Predecessor.
Divine Predecessors,
yes,
that's
the
word.
Yes. The amazing...
Do you know the beautiful brain scoop ladle that they have?
Yes, I do, but you preface this with fun scene. So you and I have some differing... I mean, yes, Lex is a masterpiece of German-Canadian erotic misanthropy.
Yes.
Which thing is a really, really, really tight description of a truly amazing series. And now comes the true song and dance routine.
Yes, they start on a... plot to confuse the robots by doing weird, irrational, illogical,
but perfectly
things.
Choreographed and clearly rehearsed.
Oh yes, totally
scripted things. Like, when did they have the opportunity to write this down? And like, did they sort of,
yeah,
brainstorm on how to do this exactly before they start?
Maybe they're just really good at improv theater.
Whoa, yeah.
It's like, you know, guys, it's just like Improv Friday on the Enterprise.
Yeah, just do that. Yeah. So McCoy and Scotty start by flanking the door,
yeah,
and playing these invisible instruments, and Chekhov and Uhura come waltzing through.
What are they doing?
They're celebrating.
They're celebrating their captivity and, yeah, their unhappiness. And, well, that makes them sort of blink like fembots being talked to death by Austin Powers.
Very good, yes.
Because apparently, like, talking the computer to death is something that Kirk and co. do quite a lot.
Yes. Logic bombs get diffused by that, and
I wonder, hey, Chief, is this the first or, like, later? Like, how many of these talk the computer to death episodes have there been at this point?
So by this point, there'd been a few instances of it. There was one in The Return of the Archons. There was one in The Ultimate Computer. There's one in The Changeling. Then there was this one with iMUD. And after this one, there was also Requiem for Methuselah. And there's some similar cases of doing stuff to make the computer or an android or whatever freak out and not really understand what's going on, such as What Are Little Girls Made Of?, Wolf in the Fold, and arguably the invasive program that Data and Geordi inserted with iBorg into a Borg hive mind. So that's some instances of this trope happening. But no, this is not the first instance of this happening by any stretch.
Wow.
Oh. Oh. I wasn't expecting that specific answer. Hey.
Yeah. So yes, there's one.
This beautiful sort of dancing here, and this curtsy, this enormous curtsy that Uhura does before slapping Chekhov.
Absolutely fantastic.
Mr. Chekhov, the floor is no place for an officer. Attention!
Yeah, he tells Chekhov to stand absolutely still, and he goes dancing, and he's like, approves of it, and like really confusing Alice.
I wonder if, like, improv theatre or, like, absurdist theatre were popular forms of entertainment at this time. So kinds of... I mean, yeah, really, right? In the UK, you'd have Monty Python by now. Monty Python was just about airing, or they were definitely performing. Yeah, yeah. So that sort of new wave of countercultural comedy and performance would absolutely be... It's pretty go-go.
This shuts down the two Alices.
Spock has another mission, so he's on a different...
Yes, he's basically doing the same thing, but he's doing the science and logic way. He's in the lab that Scotty was
with a laser lathe.
Yes.
Oh yeah, he tries to nerve pinch a.
He tries to nerve pinch the
robot.
Doesn't work.
Is there any significance to this gesture? No.
No, nothing. Don't forget about it.
I love you. However, I hate you.
But. I'm identical in every way with Alice 27.
Yes, of course. That is exactly why I hate you. Because you are identical.
Yes. Which goes like,
And they also sort of shut down. So success.
Success, Captain. We've shut down four, and we only have 207,483 left.
Yes. Oh, yes. Because they figured out that Norman must be the central locus.
Yes.
And I figured that out earlier. I thought it was very clever. Because when Norman said how many androids there were, it was an odd number.
No. Oh, very good.
Right? Yes. And we've seen them all in pairs and multiples. So I was already figuring that he was a prime unit, which we discover when he walks around from behind his console. And, wow, that boy needed a dance belt. Like, if this is him wearing a dance belt already, then boy howdy.
Well, I mean, like, we... found a good co-star for David Bowie in
Labyrinth,
thank you.
Yes, we just can't take your eyes off and imagine playing with his balls.
They corner Norman behind his console and then they start playing the whole same game to him, just like confusing him with illogical inconsistencies and...
Yes, and just bizarre poetry, you know, logic is a little tweeting bird chirping in the meadow.
Logic is a wreath of pretty flowers. Smell bad.
Yeah. I mean, that's not illogical. Flowers can be very pretty and still smell like death.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that makes no sense.
But yes, I was just completely just totally absorbed by the lump in his pants.
Yes.
I believe the Greatest Generation folks call that a moose knuckle.
Yes, as opposed to a camel toe.
Yes.
Yes. No, absolutely. Scotty is overcome by happiness and asks to be killed.
I'm tired of happiness. I'm tired of comfort and pleasure. I'm ready. Kill me. Kill me.
Which they do. They all point their fingers and they do the warbling whistle together. It's just like we rehearsed, everyone.
Yes. Which confuses them even more. Oh, you can't have done that.
They do some object work now, I think, as it's known in improv theatre, where Spock produces the explosive
from
his shirt.
There's a little bit of a weird handoff where he pitches it to Mudd.
Who, almost drops it, but no, he catches it behind his back and everyone's tremendously pleased.
Detonator. Fuse. Primer. Mashing.
Primer. Fuse. Yes. Mashy. I don't know what a mashy is, but...
A drink, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
What's a mashy?
Okay, well, that's interesting. So, at first, I was listening back to it over and over and over, and I'm like, I feel like they're saying matchstick. But no, it's instead a type of golf club. At this point now, it's an obsolete golf club, but effectively like a 5-iron.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that. Yeah, oh, no, damn it!
He plays it like it's a golf club.
Yeah, it's a mashie, okay? Come on, don't you know what a mashie is? Everyone knows what a mashie is, right? Right?
Illogical, and smoke comes out of his head.
Yes, very well done, in fact, there.
And Norman has a dick aneurysm and collapses.
Wow. All right, which allows them to somehow... reprogram all the androids.
Yeah. So in between scenes, suddenly everything is fine. We're back in control of the Enterprise and they're being reprogrammed to their original purpose, which, woof.
I guess it's like, yeah, they're basically undoing what Mudd did to them.
It's an awfully quick resolution to an incredibly dangerous situation.
Well, you know, this is Star Trek, you know. This is like, we've just had the last commercial break and we are down for the resolution. And the lead into the next show, on which is going to air after more commercials. Because this is American TV that this end aired on.
Yep. McCoy gloats to Spock, like, oh, how disappointing it must be to see that this perfect society that was so logical and just like you, and we irrational humans whipped them in a fair fight.
Yeah.
And now you have to go back to living among us.
Uh-huh, and he's like, well...
Which I find eminently satisfactory, Doctor. For nowhere am I so desperately needed as among a shipload of illogical humans.
And yes, you're right, Spock. Nowhere are you more desperately needed than in the captain's laundry hamper.
But you are forgetting about Mudd, who is under the impression that he will be leaving with the crew.
Yes.
When in fact he is being condemned by Kirk to live on this planet. And he's like, oh, well, I guess I can suffer this... pleasure escape.
Yes, and we've even created an entire range of robots specifically to cater to your every whim. Right.
Harcourt! Harcourt Fenton Mudd!
And it's Stella.
You've been drinking again? You've been eating too much?
And this time she won't shut up.
Oh, and there's
no
like,
chance.
And not is it just Stella. It is like another Stella.
Stella.
And then a third Stella shows up and she has like a number 500 on her. This is a bit of... you know, psychological punishment that they're inflicting on him.
If not torture.
Yeah.
Like permanent imprisonment without trial.
Yeah.
On a planet. This is incredibly dangerous
it
stuff
is.
Here, but we're all just having a laugh at his expense. And everyone just walks away and the Enterprise warps away from this honestly beautiful in the remastered version planet.
Yeah.
It's got these beautiful rings.
It's K-class, so not very nice outside, but yeah, once we're in the dome.
Yeah, and we're all done. All's well that ends
well.
Yes.
You know, except for Mudd.
Yeah, I was left with some seriously, like, I found that very unpleasant as an ending.
It doesn't seem to be fitting a Starfleet crew.
But I guess that's how plots were resolved back in those days.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's played for laughs, but, you know, if you think about it, it's kind of horrific.
Yeah, well, that's enough of that. Oh, I've had an idea for what we can call our deleted scene segment.
Okay, do go on.
Captain's Log, Supplemental.
Oh, very
yeah,
good.
Yeah, supplemental material
right, okay.
That we imagine was omitted from this series. And it's one of our little funny recap
what
opportunities.
What I kind of would have wanted to see is the all-crew orgy slash bacchanal, which is going on at the same time as this whole thing is being resolved. Because the entire crew has been moved off the Enterprise.
And only so the bridge crew has Kirk there whipping them into shape. Exactly, and everybody else is losing themselves.
Having fun.
Yeah. But, oh, they're all fully functional.
But, oh, yes.
Even the males want to have their purposes.
Yeah. But no, really, what would even be even funnier would be a scene where Spock is like trying to get the Alice's to shut down. And where he does the, he tries the nerve pinch on them and he just goes to squeak and he kind of looks like funny. That doesn't work. So then he grabs himself by the neck and pinches himself out to see whether or not he's, did I do that right? And he grabs himself and he falls over.
Well, it doesn't quite work on yourself, though. Maybe if he sits on his hand for about 5 minutes.
I was going to say, do a stranger.
Yeah, exactly. So mine's a little bit more outlandish.
Okay, go on.
Because I was thinking about how one of the best Star Trek films in the original series sort of run was based on an episode of the original series where the antagonist was marooned on a planet and left to rot there.
Wrath of Khan.
So I'm thinking The Wrath of Mud.
Oh.
Right? What? And let's have him played by Ricardo Montalban, because why the f*** not?
Okay, yeah.
Right? And he's left on, this is Deneb 5! And he has to trick, you know, Chekhov or whoever into surrendering the Enterprise and seizes the Genesis device into making another planet full of hot babes, my true.
Yes, because more sexism is always good.
Yeah, and he would also quote Shakespeare, right? Plenty of Shakespeare to be quoted here.
There's
so,
quite
a
bit of Shakespeare around. Cool, yeah.
One day, if we reach the point where like fan art becomes a thing for our podcast, then I very, very much want a poster for Star Trek II, The Wrath of Mud.
Maybe you can ask some AI to make it for you.
No. This is... No, AI is not...
What is this?
That's it's literally called Fire All Weapons.
Oh, okay.
If anyone else is wondering, yes, I too jumped out of my chair when I heard that because holy shit, Cocky.
Oh, I've got another one. Let me see.
Unable to comply.
See that one? Yeah. Maybe that one's more sensible.
Okay. Right.
But, okay, so let's find out.
Our chief engineer has provided us again with a few samples from next week's episode. So we get to sit and speculate and see if we can guess what it is before it all is revealed.
Yeah, so let's start with...
Are we still pretending?
Apparently so.
Okay, that's line pretending? One. Okay, I immediately know it. I immediately know what this is.
I immediately went to a Father of the Pride episode, but...
Oh. Where the grandfather, speaking about the son
the kid is like, he's sitting in the bathtub listening to Tori Amos, and grandpa goes like, oh, we're still pretending he's not gay.
Somebody out here ought to have a little hope.
Oh.
Hmm. So are we still pretending and
somebody out here ought to have a little hope.
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
You need a feather in your hat.
Oh, is this like the episode where Q gets the crew of the Enterprise as merry men and like Rob and Worf is like, sir, I'm not a merry man.
Oh, let's find out. We've got one more.
After they brought you back from your time in the collective, do you honestly feel like you've regained your humanity?
Oh, okay. So it's this Next Generation late series episode with... Are we talking about Picard here? Is it someone
we are
else?
Talking about Picard, but not in the way you think, because listen...
Picard Season 1, Episode 5, Stardust City Rag.
Yeah!
There we go then. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for coming to listen to us, and we shall see you next week with Picard Series 1, Episode 5.
So looking forward to it, because for everyone who maybe hasn't seen it before, if you're about to watch it, the opening is rough.
Okay.
It's a really rough opening scene. I'm saying this to you, Kay, as well.
All right.
So just like squint your eyes and like prepare yourself for that. And then after that, the episode is actually a lot of fun.
Okay.
And then the ending is a little bit rough as well.
Right.
But in the middle, we're going to have a lot of fun.
Well,
and in the meantime...
I'm
leaving Starfleet.
Oh. Energize! We're doing the energy.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode with your friends Kay and Cocky. Production and editing by your chief engineer Greg, and music by Fox Amour. Join us next time for Stardust City Rag from Picard Season 1, Episode 5. Visit joyoftrek.com/links to send us your recommendations, support us on Patreon, or to find us on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening to The Joy of Trek, and we'll see you out there.